means like off, cameras off, they can be a lot different, a lot more loose and comfortable. It's really hard for me to imagine Rudolph coming in as a third round pick, not a first round pick, and strutting into the place like he's Vince McMahon walking through the
curtain. But if the GM says he's got a first round grade on you and talks you up like you are going to be.
Wait, do you think Mason's pretty smart? Because like he did acknowledge like what guys get paid and what guys, like where they get drafted. I don't care if the GM said he had a first round grade on you. He drafted your teammate you were throwing the ball to before you.
Right.
So I don't care if he says that. If I'm Mason Rudolph, I'm like, eh, if you had a first round grade, you'd have taken me at least in the second round and you didn't.
Mason, I already referenced this today, sounds kind of sheepish when he does interviews. I don't think he's great at it. So the Mason Rudolph we hear does not sound like someone who's exactly oozing confidence.
Right, like he's going to go in there like strutting. That's what I have a hard time.
I don't know. That's what I heard. Aditi's going to join us at 4:15. She was around for those days. She was in the facilities. Maybe
I just
she
don't
heard
think
that.
It does Ben a ton of, not that Ben cares what I think about how he talks, but it's like odd to me that he would use his platform at all to even like subtly punch down at Rudolph. What does it gain you? If like to say like I'm surprised he didn't say oh they'll go 5-12 with Rudolph or something like he kept that at a somewhat reasonable number I guess.
You think it is reasonable that there's a 4-win difference between the two guys? I don't.
I would be more like if I'm going Rudolph low end, Rogers high end might be 11, but I doubt it. I think it's more 8-10 if I'm making that thing, like a 1, maybe a 2-win difference. But really the number here is. It's 9-8 with Aaron Rodgers, and it's 9-8 a different way with Mason Rudolph.
I like the last comment Ben made. He didn't even look at it as a positive that you went 11-6 with Aaron Rodgers because it would just hurt the Steelers' draft position was the thing that he sneaked in there at the end. So, you know, Ben, the thing that's unique about Ben living here is that he still clearly listens to what's being said about the team.
He's plugged in.
And I think he actually has a very good sense for, like, the pulse of the fan base. He does a show that is all about... You know, we're ratings based. He's subscription based for YouTube. And I think he's already got over 100,000 people that are subscribed to his channel. And Ben does a good job, I think, of putting his opinions out there, but at the same time, not saying things that are going to like sit badly with the fan base. The only thing I think he risks right now with this is, as I say that out loud, fans love Mason Rudolph.
He's turned into the people's champ.
No doubt.
Like,
Mason Rudolph is more popular than Aaron Rodgers with Steelers fans. I would even say that Will Howard's more popular with Steelers fans than Aaron Rodgers is.
Well, the longer the Rodgers thing drags on with no official resolution, I think the longer people who are in who would put themselves in the middle and say, I don't really care that much one way or the other, are just like, ugh, it's just getting annoying. I don't dislike the player even or the person, but God, this is just getting tiresome. Like, I think that would be a natural human reaction. To Rodgers right now.
I think the difference between the two is more like 9 absolute best case scenario with Rodgers. And if I say worst case with worst case scenario with Rudolph, it's 6. But if I actually do what I think is going to happen if both guys play, it's 8 with Aaron Rodgers and it's 8 with Mason Rudolph.
It's folly, though, to say 8, because unless you got 8-1 up your sleeve.
No, I'm saying 8-9. I feel good about that. I think he's going to have his first losing season, regardless of who plays. And I think it would be hilarious if Mike Tomlin, the guy that we still see, my friend Nick Wright, top 5 coach, complete crap, Mike Mularkey and Doug Marrone have won playoff games more recently.
Did you confront Nick about that?
I tweeted it, and he never got back to me. So he had bigger fish to fry yesterday.
I think you got to text him with that one and say, Nick, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then he'll say, like, oh, like...
I was busy hanging out with, and he'll just name
Oh,
somebody.
Lil Wayne texted me about my Packers take. Screw off. Okay.
LeBron actually texted me just to see how
LeBron
I was
doing.
LeBron
dapped me up at a game, which is true. He did the opposite of what he did to Stephen A. Smith to me. He acted like he liked me.
Wait, is Nick on good terms with Stephen A.?
I don't know. I've never asked him that question, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Now
Don,
I kind of want to know.
What do you think the difference in wins is between Mason Rudolph and Aaron Rodgers? Do you agree with Ben? And do you think Ben did this because it's out of his spite and disdain and dislike for Mason Rudolph?
I think there's always going to be a little undertone of that. I don't think it's that great of a difference. Like, at the peak of Aaron Rodgers, I think they are 11 wins. I agree with him there. But I still think it's 8, and I would go with 9 if they get the peak Mason Rudolph play.
okay, and I did the same game where I said like best case for Rodgers and worst case for Mason Rudolph to get the clear, to get the true like golf or range of outcomes, but just your expectation for both guys, what you think would actually happen, not best or worst case, what you would predict to happen. 17 games Rodgers, 17 games Rudolph is what?
I think it might be a one game difference. Like what I would actually go with if Rodgers.
So predict Rodgers.
Signs would be like 10-7.
Okay, and then predict Mason.
9-8.
That's why signing Aaron Rodgers to me, if fans feel like Donnie does, it's, I mean, how many 10-7 teams do we see win the Super Bowl?
I mean, the Giants won it as a 9-7 team.
Yeah, that was 2011.
You know, back in the day.
I mean, 10-7 probably gets you in.
You got to be the right kind of 10-7 team to have a chance. Like a team that scuffled because of injuries and got red hot.
9-8 is on the cusp. 9-8 teams get in and get left out every year. So if, you know, I mean, if, see, this is where, I'll tell you where it does make sense. Let's go back to Rooney's brother talking about outperforming the mean.
Love that.
If you're trying to outperform the mean and that's actually your goal as a team, if the brother of the principal owner was telling the truth, which I think he probably was, then if internally the Steelers have the same projections or same view of themselves as Donnie, well then 10-7 versus 9-8 is a big difference. To me, I think it isn't, because it just, it backs up what Ben said. It just makes you even further away from getting what is probably the most important thing to do in 2025, which is get the best draft pick possible.
In the long term, it makes your life as a franchise more difficult.
Yeah.
It just does. That's the simplest way to
put it. And I'm going to reference my guy, Ross Tucker, who we know is obviously smart because he went to an Ivy League school. He's Princeton educated.
How many Ivy Leagues were you accepted
Columbus,
into?
Columbia and Cornell. And then Princeton would look down on both those places. And we'll talk to someone who went to Cornell later in the show. But Ross's take was, what do you really get if the finish line with Aaron Rodgers is 10-7? What will you have truly gotten out of this season? You'll be no closer to figuring out who your long-term quarterback is, because you will have just handed the position over to a 41-year-old man.
And if he goes,
that's not a solution.
And if he goes 10-7, there's almost no way he'll have looked good enough where you could somehow talk yourself into like running it back with him.
Why would you want to do that?
I'm saying if he went 13-4, it would be, and he looked somehow like he had found the foul.
Yeah, if
he squint and you could say, all right,
if he's Tom Brady in Tampa,
yes,
exactly.
I guess we do this again. But if he's 10-7, there's almost no way he individually looks good enough where you could talk yourself into it.
The second annual Fan 5 Alarm Marathon presented by Allegiant Federal Credit Union is going to take place June 5th and 6th. The Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department. We're looking for 25 fire departments that will benefit from this year's fundraising. Register your fire department now at 937thefan.com. Brought to you by Cintas, True Green, Don's Appliances, and Hampton Beer Outlet. It is a final. The Pirates have tied the Major League record. They've now gone 26 games without scoring more than 4 runs. That is the bad news. The good news, another strong pitching performance from Andrew Heaney. Henry Davis probably had his best game in a Pirates uniform.
He hit 2 home runs in a game against the Angels. Come on now.
But he also had the great play defensively at the plate today. So if you think about it, what they drafted him to do.
That's true.
Although with his bat and with his glove.
Game, but he had 2 hits here. That's the bottom line. He had 2 hits. He is way over the Davis line. He is approaching rapidly, boys, the Mendoza line.
And the Pirates were able to get it done. Their starting pitching has been phenomenal. Skeens, Keller, Heaney, and now you throw Falter in there with what he did last night. Hasn't been that way all year, but for the month of May, you have to include Majinski, even though they optioned Majinski down to the minors today and called up Mike Burrows, not Bubba Chandler, which Travis Sawcheck, the former Pirate beat reporter, now national baseball writer, just coming out and saying that this is a Super 2 manipulation of a guy's contract situation going on. That's the only reason why Chandler's not getting called up.
Why is Majinski not being sent to the bullpen where they desperately need him and where he would instantly be like tonic for them?
I'm not sure why that is.
And you tweeted this out, and I'm not stealing it because we had the same thought. Instead, human gas can Colin Holderman is still.
Oh, I didn't tweet that out.
Oh, then somebody else did. But Holderman, I mean, you're still trotting Holderman out there when it's like, at best, it's a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride situation. Majinski's built for the bullpen. Bailey Falter, by the way, I got to give him like more than just a little props. 23 and two-thirds innings his last four starts. He has given up one earned run. One. Opponents OPS against 448 in those 23 and two-thirds. Like, he's been a monster in the month of May.
They've done the thing that Pirates fans who were optimistic about them this year, what they hoped they would be able to do, which is pitch their fannies off. From a starting pitching standpoint, you're right, the bullpen has
been
erratic.
By the way, is on the IL. My bad. That was a
what?
Freudian slip. I forgot he was on the IL.
Yes,
the,
they called up...
The YouTube commenters have pointed out
they called up that guy that no one had ever heard of, Isaac Newton or something like that.
Yeah,
that,
sir?
Anyways.
Yes.
So the starting pitching has been more than sound, which the formula to win this year was with great starting pitching. So now they've got that figured out. But their offense is historically now inept. You
one
know,
game away they, from being alone at the top of the or bottom of the historical chart.
I mean, if Charrington went, if and when he gets fired, I think it's a matter of when, not if. But I think he's going to look back on this and say, I can't say 50% because there's relief pitching too, but I got maybe 35, 40% of my job. Very right.
I'd argue he got the hardest part of the job, right, getting true good starting pitching. Isn't that what everyone craves at that level, especially this level?
Yeah, I think it's a little overrated now because bullpens are used more and we're, I think, back into an environment where it's actually harder to score runs than it is to pitch. But yeah, I mean, that the foundation of a good team is starting pitching. That's what everybody has said since Abner Doubleday and Albert Spaulding and all those guys put the sport in an organized fashion together. Okay, like that should be the nucleus of your team. And they have that. And they're blowing it in spectacular fashion. They have one guy, league average OPS right now in baseball is 710. They have one player on the entire team who's better than that. Cruz, he's mired in a wicked slump. Everyone else, by that definition, which you see OPS now on baseball broadcasts more than you do batting average, because the smart baseball people have deemed that getting on base and hitting for power is more important than just getting a single one out of every three at-bats.
Well, that's how the game is being run at the highest levels. So
they have one guy on the entire big league roster who is, by that definition, a good hitter. And unlike Bubba Chandler and Barco and these other guys who are waiting in the wings as pitchers, they have none of that as far as hitters go. Griffin is really the only one, and he's
2 years away.
He's 2 years
away at the absolute most aggressive timeline, which they
he's
never
playing for
pursue.
The Bradenton Marauders.
They're never. I even saw people write him up about how well he was playing, and there was like an acknowledgement that the Pirates are almost always very conservative with young prospects. Like, they're not the team that's going to bring up a 20-year-old player.
Yeah, he's not going to be Juan
Soto. What was the old line I used to say to
or
you?
Bryce
like,
Harper?
If Mike Trout was in the Pirates system, he would have come up when he was 23.
Juan Soto and Henry Davis are like a year apart in age, maybe less. Okay, so on one hand, see, if they had a better record right now, I think you could look at them and say, okay, like there's some respectability here because they're pitching the ball so well.
Or there's hope that eventually the bats will turn around in time to save pitching.
But I disagreed with Brownie on that yesterday. He's like, look at where these guys are compared to their career OPS. Reynolds is 30 now and McCutcheon's almost 40. I don't think Adam Frazier is going to get back to his career OPS or Tommy Pham.
Also,
I don't know why Tommy Pham played again today. I don't know why he's on the team.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I don't know why he's continuing to take at-bats.
And don't give me, well, look how long it took Rowdy Tellez to turn it around last year.
I just thought Greg's argument yesterday, look at all these career OPSs, like when he cited Hayes's, it wasn't like a good career OPS, especially for a power infield position. The track records for the younger guys who aren't hitting are not that much better than what they've shown. Like they're better hitters career-wise, but not that much. And then all the other guys whose career track records are much more impressive are at the end of the line. Put all that together and you really have very little to pin your hopes on.
I'll give Charrington credit for this. It's not a small thing, but obviously the record and the fact that their hitters are so god-awful overshadow all this. They're also doing this great starting pitching with Jared Jones getting Tommy John surgery today.
Did you see what this is?
It's so, not Tommy John.
Oh, what is it?
It's
UCL?
Not. It's a UCL surgery because the recovery, according to the Pirates' own Twitter feed, is 10 to 12 months. So he went right elbow surgery. The procedure performed was a repair to the UCL. Now, I'm an idiot.
Isn't UCL surgery Tommy John surgery?
I'm an idiot. I don't know what kind of UCL repair surgery exists that is not considered Tommy John. I know that Tommy John is a very specific thing. Like, you take, a cadaver ligament? You graft it into the elbow. I believe that's how it has to involve a ligament from a cadaver. So what? Was his tear such that they could... Was it a partial tear? Like, I would love some transparency here.
I thought they took a ligament from your leg. They're taking it from a dead person's body?
I always thought it was a cadaver ligament. Maybe
what?
Maybe that's for ACL repairs.
Someone who's donated their body to science once they've passed away, they're putting that human's ligament in your arm? So Garrett Cole had a dead dude's ligament put in his arm a few months ago.
A UCL reconstruction surgery involves harvesting a tendon from your own body, so what you said, or from a donor. Somebody's just going to go, that Garrett Cole needs my UCL. No, I think it's a cadaver.
Could
for
you
the
imagine
donor.
That if I donated?
Give me that. Let this man have my UCL.
Paul Skeens needs Tommy John. He gets my ligament.
So it could be a tendon from your own body, but it also could be from a cadaver, I believe, because I don't think there's living donors for that one. This leads me to believe, because typically the return time for that is 12 to 18 months. I'm just speculating here because their own Twitter feed put out 10 to 12 months for a, quote, a projected return to full competition. Did he have a partial tear?
I bet it's going to be 18. If that's what it usually is, I'm not buying 10 to 12.
I'm inclined to agree, and I guess Jared Jones' dad can come and tweet me if he wants, but the first time around for him didn't go so
Jared
well.
Jared Jones' dad can come and try to fight me. I'm tough now. You've seen my gym videos.
If they took your,
come on, Jared Jones' dad.
If
let's
you
go.
Wanted to donate your UCL to
I'll
Jared Jones,
Greg
you
Brown's
couldn't.
Honor.
You couldn't donate it. They'd say it's a PED for Jared Jones. Your UCL's gotten so strong.
Oh, my protein intake.
He'd be like that Rowan Gartner kid. His arm would make that stretchy sound, and then he'd throw 110.
I'm shooting for 180 grams of protein a day now.
180 grams?
Yep.
That's too much.
No, it's not.
Who are you, Kurt Angle? Serious question about Rogan, the interviewer.
Yeah.
Serious one. I've only seen, you'll see little clips. Like, there's this one British astronomer named Brian Cox, who I do find very interesting because Rogan will ask him, about black holes and stuff. And,
yeah.
it's got that, golden retriever quality. So he's like, tell me more about this. Do you like the Rogan interviewing style where the curiosity on his part and naivete about,
I haven't
these
watched
subjects,
him enough.
It borders on almost, too much. Like, Joe, you cannot be that. You know what I mean? Like, he's informed about what his guest knows, but his questions are like, tell me about the sun. And people...
Lap it up. He's got one of the most listened to podcasts
but you know
in America.
What it is? You know what it is, though? He just lets the guest do all the work.
Donnie, have you watched his interviews with Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, all your favorite wrestlers?
I haven't seen those.
He's done a lot of those, I guess.
He just will go like, tell me about this time that you punched this guy in the face to a pro wrestler, and they'll just spill their guts. It's incredible. We've got a... JDDD on YouTube just said, Donnie, I think a very topical remark here. Pony waxes his chest with Elmer's glue.
I consulted with a now good friend of mine, Joe Rogan.
So we'll let you know what Rogers said there. Rogers was at a rap concert over the weekend shooting off squirt guns. Still no deal with the Steelers. We'll check the Rogan podcast to see if he offered any insight on when he'll sign. It's time to talk to Mike Florio, brought to you by Goodrich & Geist. Get the good guys, Goodrich & Geist. Mike Florio, also brought to you by JP Roofing & Siding, your hometown roofing expert. Mike from ProFootballTalk.com, PFT Live. Brooke Pryor, ESPN Steelers reporter at the Owners Summit in Minneapolis, Mike, gleaned that the Steelers don't have a deadline at all on Rodgers, and She heard that he could show up at any time. If he wants to pull a Brett Favre and show up in the preseason, they would be fine with that. Is that also what you've heard?
I have not heard that. I remember at one point Mike Tomlin said the line of demarcation is the start of training camp. But, you know, when you've basically taken the position that we'll wait for this guy indefinitely, you've given him a license to take indefinitely to show up. I was intrigued by Ian O'Connor's comments to you guys from Friday about his thoughts based upon the people he knows, and he wrote that Rodgers biography that it's coming sooner rather than later, and I think there is benefit in being present for OTAs and mandatory minicamp. But, yeah, Favre didn't show up until the middle of August, and I remember there was reporting of a schism within the Vikings because some of the players wanted Tarvarius Jackson, not Brett Favre, and Favre showed up for one practice. And you know what happened? Favre started throwing missiles all over the place, and the schism went away.
So I guess the assumption is that would happen with Aaron Rodgers then, you think? He's still got enough left in the tank to be that guy?
I think the minute he shows up, starts firing the ball around, and because his arm strength really is in his arm, it's not the full body dry heave that Kirk Cousins has to do, and at age 41, he can still fire it like he always has. Yeah, I think when he shows up and players who have been there through the quarterbacks they've had since Ben Roethlisberger retired, they'll be saying, holy crap, and the delay and the consternation, and this isn't like the Steelers to do this, and either wants to be a Steeler or he doesn't. That's all forgotten after his first practice.
Mike, are you convinced that this is really just about him not wanting to go through what he deems to be pointless exercises to get him ready for a season? Or do you believe this still could be about him hoping another team has a quarterback issue or injury that pops up and not wanting to pick the Steelers before that better, greener pasture appears?
It could be both. And I had someone who knows him but doesn't know anything specifically about his deliberations as it relates to 2025 made a very good point week and a half ago that when you look at the distractions, the two different distractions that he could be creating, one, he's not signed with the team and he's out there hovering. That's one distraction. The other distraction would be signs with the team, skips phase one and phase two of the offseason program. That's a different distraction. That's a greater distraction. Then you've got players asking, having to answer questions. Where's Rodgers? Do you wish he was here? You know, if you talk to him, all that stuff. And Tomlin having to deal with it. So the lesser distraction is just not be signed. And he does hate the first two phases of the offseason program. And, you know, it all makes sense for him to be there by next Tuesday when the OTAs start. But we're running out of time for him to show up before we get to next Tuesday.
Mike, I think Ross Tucker was the one who brought this up and just kind of made this open-ended statement or kind of musing about the whole thing. Because we were trying to figure out, based on Ben Roethlisberger saying he thought they were an 11-win team with Rodgers, a 7-win team with Rudolph. Say they go 10-7 with Rodgers, and it's another first-round playoff exit, or they don't even make it at 10-7 because it's a strong year in the AFC. What exactly would be gained at that point by having had Rodgers here for a year?
Nothing. But I still think they're better with Rodgers than they are without him. And the DK Metcalf move, which the Steelers have never done anything like that.
Yep.
And for them to have done that tells me they're willing to do things differently because they want to end this drought of no playoff victory that dates back to the 2016 season. So I think Rodgers makes them better, and Rodgers makes it more likely that they get to where they want to go by way of winning a playoff game. I don't know that he gets them to the Super Bowl, but he gets them farther than they've gotten in almost 10 years. And there's a desperation that is reflected by the fact that they're doing stuff they've never done before. The Metcalf trade and contract they've never done before. Staying on bended knee while waiting for an answer to the proposal, and they've been on bended knee for 2 months now, that's something they've never done before. And I think it smacks of a desperation that they embrace because they recognize they have to do some things differently to get beyond where they've been recently.
Mike, I'll go one more in the extreme then. If they win one playoff game and then get bounced in the divisional round, again, what will all of that have actually accomplished in any kind of a long-term sense?
Well, nothing. It just leads to a better season. And you still need a long-term answer at quarterback, but none of those guys are around. It's not Mason Rudolph. It's not Skylar Thompson. Maybe it's Will Howard. I don't know. But Will Howard's not going to play this year. They still need to find a long-term quarterback, and maybe through the course of getting the most they can out of Aaron Rodgers, they recognize through practice and meetings and et cetera that Will Howard can be developed into the answer.
Mike, the Steelers are one of 22 teams who voted to ban the push-tush. My take on that is
the tush-push.
If the ethos of your team is we're all about blue collar physical football, we want to be the tougher team wins. How does a team with the background and history of the Steelers vote to get rid of the tush push, Mike? I was surprised by the Steelers having that opinion. What's your take on it?
Well, because they went along with what the principal wanted. I think that's what it came down to. And from the moment that Lions president Rod Wood admitted that, and there was no reason for this, he just kind of blurted it out, that the league had come to them and instigated them to make the proposal for changing the playoff seeding, that's when I thought, hey, you know what? I bet the league did the same thing with the Packers on this tush-push thing. And we reported earlier today that's exactly what happened, that the league got the Packers to do it. The league wanted this. And
because they don't have an owner, right? Isn't that the convenient part of it for them if they make the Packers do it?
Yeah, that's part of it. But the Packers still have to carry around this stink now, and they're embarrassed by it. They would have been better off finding a team from the AFC to be the standard bearer for this thing, or just do it through the normal process, through the competition committee. I don't like the idea of using some fiction, like creating some perception of a grassroots effort starting with a team. It's weird that the NFL does this now, but it could be just kind of going along. You know, weren't the Steelers against the Thursday night flexing, and didn't they end up getting a couple of short week Thursday night games that first year because of it? I remember several teams that were
absolutely
against
happened.
Thursday night flexing got retaliated against. And I think that from Art Rooney's perspective, it's probably better to go along to get along.
Mike, do you?
I don't know that, but I just think that makes sense.
You think Jason Kelce had any legitimate impact in how this vote ended up transpiring when he apparently went in there and gave his impassioned speech in favor of keeping it?
Well, I think between Jeffrey Lurie and Jason Kelce, the idea that they really went straight for the argument that, hey, look, all these different excuses you're giving are bullcrap. You're moving the goalposts. You're saying it's a safety risk, and we ask you for data. Oh, well, we don't have any, but it could be a safety risk. You know, one of the things Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the team, said today is it's a safety risk if you take it away. So I don't think this is dead either. It was a 22-10 vote. All they need is two no's to become yeses by next year, and I think they'll keep at it because this is something that the league wanted. The commissioner is 1-for-3 this week. They got the Olympics flag football participation. They withdrew the Lions playoff seating, which the league instigated and which I'm told the commissioner wanted, and they blew this one too. That's not a good batting average for the guy whose name is on every football.
I do not understand the Olympic thing. I do understand that they want more money and more exposure, and that's what the NFL is all about. But we're going to have Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill playing against guys from Nigeria. Mike, I mean, what are we doing here with that? What's the point of that?
Well, there's a lot of ready, fire, aim that's going on in the league office right now, and I think this is an example of it. It's a very simple logic. They want to take advantage of the international platform to grow the game globally, and if they grow the game globally, they make more money off of their international games, and they've got a 100-year plan. I think they won't admit this, but they'd like to catch soccer the way that 50 years ago it would have been inconceivable that football would catch baseball in America, and they're fully committed to it. But, hey, I love rooting for the underdog. Now, when it's time for the Olympics, it's USA, USA, and I check the medal standings every day and, you know, make sure we're staying ahead of China or whoever else the top competition is. But the idea of a bunch of NFL players barnstorming into a type of football that is dramatically different from tackle football and potentially having circles run around them by seasoned flag football players, that's must-see TV.
Season,
and it's a no-win proposition
for NFL
players.
I agree with that, Mike, but
I'd love to see
hold
that.
On.